the fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. The Showdown. The Showdown with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk mixed martial arts, UFC, ONE FC, Bellator, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. As always, my co-host in studio is Tyler Mason. You can catch him online via Twitter, at Tyler Mason, myself, at Showdown Joe. And for those wondering about the Facebook page still, if you don't know, Facebook is having issues with Twitter. And Twitter, it's a back-and-forth situation. It's been going on for quite some time, and I'm having a difficult time in terms of how I operate my social media, and my Facebook page fortunately cannot be updated until they fix that issue with Twitter. I'm not going to get into it, but I apologize for those that used to go to my Facebook page, but it'll get fixed hopefully soon.
But your Twitter's okay.
Twitter's fantastic.
So as everybody needs updates, your Twitter is running smoothly, and we can go on there and check it all out.
Yes, you can, anything and everything MMA-wise, you want to go to my Twitter. Facebook would be more for the same thing that I have. It'll just be populated with the information that I have on my Twitter, but you'll get all kinds of pictures on my Facebook and different types of discussion. For example, you can look at it as a message board, and if a tweet goes up there, you can actually discuss it. There's also some new stuff coming down with Sportsnet.ca and yours truly. Stay tuned. It should be up and running, a few things up and running within about a week or two. So I had a great meeting with the team over there earlier today. A fantastic group of guys, as always. And I had an idea, and they brought the big wigs in, and they all smiled and said, yep, we'll do it. So it's just a matter of time. Nothing crazy, nothing big, but it's going to happen. Unfortunately, not as big as the continued fallout from UFC 151 being canceled. I don't know, Tyler, it just doesn't seem to end.
No, I mean, it's funny that the story continues to develop. I mean, we talked about it last week. Everyone by this point knows the whole John Jones, Chael Sonnen fiasco and the event being canceled and that. And yeah, I mean, last week it was Machida stepping in, and then apparently Machida turned down the fight. So now it's Vitor Belfort stepping in. A fight that, you know, I think we've discussed doesn't really make a whole lot of sense as far as the light heavyweight title picture. And then Chael Sonnen, he released an interesting picture from Mean Street Pizza,
which apparently is a real pizza place because they've got a website with a real menu. It's in Westland, Oregon. I wonder if he's actually, I don't know if he's the owner. I should have called him or texted him or emailed him and seen if this is the real thing. But the ad is hilarious. You can just Google it, but it's a Mean Street Pizza, pasta, wings, salads, and more. They have a John Jones, and I first of all, I want to completely apologize to John Jones and his fans and everyone. It's just satire. It's just a joke. Don't take it personal, but it's just Chael Sonnen being Chael Sonnen. It's called the John Jones Special Pizza, loaded with chicken and full of cheese, comes with a 6-pack of beer. Hurry up, get this deal now before our chicken runs out and we have to cancel. Delivery is available. Avoid a DUI.
And you know what? Funny's funny. I mean, we can apologize to John Jones, but that's Chael Sonnen being Chael Sonnen, and it's really hilarious. And
I think it's funny. I don't think hopefully John does see the
I mean,
funniness, if you know what I'm
saying.
I don't think
I don't think he sees the funniness because, you know, there's been reports that he went to Dana White and asked Dana White to step in and get Chael Sonnen to stop picking on him.
I heard about that. The apparent report is that, like you said, he contacted Dana White to have Chael Sonnen stop doing what he's doing. And then all this went down and John Jones is no longer following Dana White on Twitter. So it continues to just spiral.
The biggest insult.
Yeah, I'm no longer following you on Twitter. So, and people are, if you follow my Twitter or Tyler's Twitter, just, you know, MMA people in general, their Twitter, you're seeing a lot of continued bashing of the UFC light heavyweight champion for anything and everything he's been saying. People are saying he's contradicting everything from the DUI situation, from the, you know, there was an apparent radio interview where he, you know, a guest or a radio host was telling John Jones about the Chael Sonnen and stuff. And, you know, bottom line is it's a payday, take him out. And Johnny said, apparently I'll fight Chael Sonnen at any time. Let's do this. And then a week later turns down the fight. It's just a strange scenario. You think you had another one that you were talking about before?
Well, it was just the DUI situation where he said, I'll never do something stupid and get a DUI. And then a month later he has a DUI. I mean, he consistently continues to put his foot in his mouth He's looking pretty bad as far as having a public image. And I mean, even the behavior of taking Dana White off his Twitter or asking Dana White to step in, it's very childlike behavior. It's not something you would expect of an adult. You'd think they would, you know, confront the person that's picking on them.
24, 25 years old, in the limelight, in the spotlight, making, you know, millions of dollars. Life changed for Johnny pretty quick. He saw it coming, but it changed pretty quick. I'm not trying to make excuses for John. I'm just saying, I remember when I was 25, and if all this happened to me when I was 25, I could understand, you know, listen, this is who I am, this is how I am. And in reality, you know, you have a lot more PR sense as the years go by. At the same time, I don't feel for John Jones, but I think he needs some people around him to say, hey, stop this. You get just careful with what you say. Just here's what we're going to do moving forward. You know?
And we've discussed this in the past that maybe it is too much, too fast for someone of his age. I mean, he is a young man. He's not in his later 20s or 30s when you think that most people would be getting these, you know, huge opportunities of fighting for the title. He moved through the ranks very fast. He had a lot of attention on him right away. And for someone in their early 20s, that's a lot to take on. And I mean, a lot of the behavior we kind of saw developing in the whole buildup with the Rashad Evans fight. And, you know, we thought maybe perhaps it would affect his fighting ability. That's the one thing it hasn't affected. John Jones is still a phenomenal fighter. But now you're kind of seeing that maybe mentally he's not ready for that kind of spotlight on him, because it's really been a PR disaster for the past couple months.
And you set up a beautiful segue. The question I really had, and we're talking about it earlier today with some of the team from UFC Central, and you and I can discuss it right now. John Jones may go down as the greatest mixed martial artist of all time. This guy is phenomenal. You can love him and hate him as much as you want. The bottom line is, inside the octagon, he is an exceptional fighter. Phenomenal. He's already taken out so many different champions. He's going to have a chance now on Saturday, September 22nd at the UFC event 154 in Toronto to defeat another UFC light heavyweight champion. The question I had, because yes, Vitor Belfort was a former UFC light heavyweight champion. You can put an asterisk next to it if you want, the way he won it. He lost it right afterwards against Randy Couture. The question we were discussing is moving forward, is John Jones an asset to the Ultimate Fighting Championship, or is he a detriment to the Ultimate Fighting Championship? Because for those that don't know, people call it towing the company line or being a company man. You're either in the UFC family, and when you're in, you get treated differently. When you're not in the UFC family, especially if you've been booted out of the UFC family, it's extremely hard to get back in. But John Jones is different than most people. If he's no longer part of that UFC quote-unquote family, and he's now on the outside looking in, he is still a major draw for the Ultimate Fighting Championship. You were talking beforehand off air that maybe it was his opponents that were the draw. The question I have, though, is he an asset or a detriment to the UFC? Because there's so many people now that want to see him lose. He's entering that Brock Lesnar territory where people are going to pay to see him lose, whether in person or whether, you know, at the bar or on pay-per-view at home.
Well, I mean, it's definitely something to look at. I think one thing that people will want to tune in to see him lose is the fact that he is pretty much undefeated. I mean, we do have that one technical loss, but John Jones has never been in danger in any fight, and I think people will tune in to see him lose because of that fact. We've never seen him in trouble, so they really want to see him to lose. If this was a Michael Bisping, I mean, he's come up recently in the news. We've seen Michael Bisping get knocked out pretty handedly in the Dan Henderson fight. So we've had that kind of catharsis of, oh, you know, maybe there's fans that don't like Bisping. They're like, oh, I really hate this guy. I want to see him lose. They've already seen that, and they've seen him lose in spectacular fashion. But we haven't seen that with John Jones. So I think, yes, he will be a draw as people tuning in to see him lose. I think the difference between a Mike Tyson and a John Jones is, you know, Mike Tyson was, you know, like a scary individual. You know, when you wanted him to lose, it was because he was this monster, this unstoppable like force. That's the way he was built. John Jones, he doesn't really have that image. He's more going the Tiger Woods way. He wants to be kind of the clean cut.
You love that analogy.
And I think it's a great analogy because of the fact of Tiger Woods' image completely blew
if
up.
If I do say so myself.
It completely blew up in the public sphere, much like John Jones. I mean, it was a very clean cut. We want, you know, our Nike sponsorships. We want to do everything right, be a role model. And then, you know, Tiger Woods had his scandal and John Jones had his DUI. There was women in the car. You know, Rashad was talking. He talked a whole bunch of stories about John Jones being fake. And there's a couple things going on behind the scenes. And now you have a champion who has the image of someone who runs away from fights instead of stands up and confronts them. And I think it's
I don't think he ran away from the fight.
No, but that's the perception. The perception is that he ran away, especially when there were so many guys stepping up on short notice. I mean, we were saying this before. There's a difference between, let's say, Machida not taking this fight in Toronto because he's ill-prepared. John Jones was as prepared as you could be. He was up until, what, 3 days left of a training camp, and then the rest of it is just media workouts and media stuff. So he was the one that was prepared, and his opponent was the one that was coming in completely unready for that fight. So that's where the perception of running away, and it doesn't help that you have the best mouth in mixed martial arts, you know, trashing you every chance he can get.
He could have silenced Chael Sonnen in the light heavyweight picture for good. One fight, one win. Chael Sonnen can do nothing but continue to, he's going to talk no matter what, but here was your chance. And Chael's so right. He's like, listen, you could have had me on 8 days, 3 days in your calendar, but 8 days notice. Now the next time we fight, or then when we do fight, I'm going to get a full 3 months preparation.
Well, I mean, maybe not full 3 months. According to Chael, he's fighting John Jones in Toronto.
That is correct. Chael Sonnen apparently is taking on John Bones Jones in Toronto because Chael Sonnen firmly believes that Vitor Belfort is the most injury-riddled fighter in mixed martial arts history and that he will be injured come Saturday, September 22nd. Imagine that. Oh, the nightmare for the UFC.
And he does have a point. I mean, it could happen. And I think with a few months build up with the Chael Sonnen and John Jones, I think there's even more interest now. I mean, now you have the clips, you have the whole trash talk leading up to this fight, and then you didn't get it. Every time you don't get something, you want it that much more. And I think the next time we see possibly Chael Sonnen and John Jones mentioned in a fight together, people are going to be lining up around the street.
Allow me to ask you this question. Who should be next for John Jones if Dan Henderson doesn't come back in time?
Well,
We know it's Machida, but who else is out there? He's already fought Machida. My issue is this, a new challenge.
Well, I'm thinking the winner of Shogun and Gustafsson.
Stop.
Especially if Gustafsson gets past Shogun.
So, what if Shogun wins?
If Shogun wins, you know what? They were ready to give him the title shot before.
Do you automatically leapfrog and go to Forrest Griffin and Chael Sonnen? If Chael Sonnen wins...
It's tough to say. I mean, if you look at the top 10 of the light heavyweight division, I mean, John Jones has pretty much run through a lot of those guys. One of the guys he hasn't fought is Forrest Griffin. You know, is that an appealing fight? Do we think that Forrest Griffin is going to go in there and beat John Jones? Not at this moment. I don't think anyone would put money on Forrest, but you really need to offer a champion new challenges, and that Forrest would be one, although he didn't look the best in his last fight.
So Forrest is Chael Sonnen. There's guys out there, but at the elite level, Johnny's already beaten them.
And with everyone getting injuries, I mean, anything can happen.
Yeah, I mean, we'll continue to talk about this as we move forward. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, listen, Vitor Belfort apparently is a 13-1 underdog.
Oh, how about even...
Huge.
Now, I know this is way off on the outside, but let's say there's a bunch of injuries. Let's say Glover Teixeira gets through Rampage Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stunning.
A first round knockout.
Let's say it's stunning. Does he leapfrog all the way up there? Rampage is still a relevant guy at the top of this division.
And yeah, he's a curveball in the equation, yep.
And he's one of those guys. I mean, he was in the news where people were kind of avoiding him because he wasn't a big name. But if you get a knockout win or a win over Rampage, you're immediately relevant in the title picture.
Who does Glover call out if he defeats Rampage Jackson? Does he go after Gustafsson right away? Does he go after Sonnen? Who does he go after?
I think he goes after anybody.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happens first. I mean, Glover and the Rampage Jackson fight's a great fight. We'll see what happens when Glover has to take on Rampage. Although Rampage is competing in Glover's home soil, it remains to be seen how that's going to go down. Now, we don't have much time before we have to go to break, because there's a whack of things we want to talk about. Before we go to break, did you see the weigh-ins, the video for 1FC's weigh-ins?
Oh, I haven't got a chance yet.
Really cool scenario between Andre Arlovsky and Tim Sylvia.
I have heard a little bit of the trash talk.
The stare down was epic. I think it was the longest stare down I've ever seen in my career in mixed martial arts. It was, I was just like, who's going to look away? Who's going to look away? I won't tell you what happened. You just, I mean, it's been crazy, but you'd have to take a look. But there's a bunch of other stuff that we want to talk about moving forward on the show here regarding mixed martial arts, some matchups, some guys coming back, some guys winning the Ultimate Fighter and getting their first fight. We'll have more on Michael Chiesa's career and that incredible story coming up after the break. You're listening to The Showdown on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
The Showdown. The Showdown with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to The Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, ONE FC, Bellator, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. As always, the man to my left, on your radio left, is Tyler Mason. You can catch him online via Twitter, at Tyler Mason, myself, at Showdown Joe. And this song that you hear in the background, it's a group called 40 Sons. Guys I know very, very well. They're actually playing in Toronto. You want to check these guys out. They're playing at Wegs, who've done numerous stuff with us over here. They're playing at Wegs September 15th, but it's only, I think, a one-hour set. So you definitely want to get out there. I know Sammy Stout's going to be there. Chris Clements is going to be there. Carter Wells from Sports Science Lab is going to be there. A bunch of guys from the MMA industry are going to be there. I am working diligently to arrange my schedule because I had a family obligation that day to somehow get out there. So, but yeah, 40 Sons. You can follow 40 Sons on Twitter, by the way, at 40 Sons. That song right there is called Hurricane, by the way. You can check it out on iTunes. So we were talking about John Jones. Can we walk away from this conversation with John Jones and then move forward to Anderson Silva?
I don't know. Maybe we could run away from it.
No. I don't want to. I enjoy it. It makes for great television and radio, and it continues to go on and on and on. We'll see what happens. There's a piece and part of me, because I know John and I've got to see him grow up in this industry, I genuinely feel bad for him. I just, from a professional standpoint, I just think he needs to get some more PR help. And that's not taking a shot at Mel Kikawa, his manager, or Johnny, or anyone else. I think a little bit more, it's almost like he's not being careless, but be careful. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think he's getting a little bit better advice. I mean, he came out and apologized through Twitter about the cancellation, saying, I will bear the cross.
And then blame Dan Henderson a couple days later.
Yes, I mean, yes. And I think it was also unfortunate. I mean, there was reports that his PR person quit weeks before this happened. I mean, and that did not help the issue. I mean, once you have someone not getting any advice on what to say and they really go out there and, again, stick their foot in their mouth, things can really blow up the wrong way.
I wasn't aware of that information, that intel, because you know, I've had my issues with certain PR people. I won't go down that path right now. We'll take that off air. Moving forward, let's talk about Anderson Silva. This whole talk about Anderson Silva versus George St. Pierre, which we will go in depth with on next week's episode of UFC Central. You have to check it out because there's some interesting stuff that no one else has on camera. We do. And then we will showcase some of it next week on UFC Central. But Anderson Silva is making news for a variety of reasons. He doesn't care, win or lose, if George St. Pierre takes on Carlos Condit. He thinks the Carlos Condit fight is meaningless for George St. Pierre, when in reality it's an interim unification belt, or a unification belt for the welterweight title. He wants George St. Pierre no matter what. I believe he's willing to go down to 178 pounds. It's a huge fight for both guys. The biggest fight in mixed martial arts history, bar none, hands down. Mark my words. But before we get to that, Anderson Silva recently came out in an interview and said he took it easy on Thallus Laettes during their fight in the main event in Montreal because they were friends. Well, let me tell you what Thallus Laettes and his coach Andre Pineris had to say. They were neither happy with that situation. They're, you know, Andre was more politically correct, saying, listen, we thank Anderson Silva, great champion, for bringing our team name up, but that's not the truth, right? The reality is, you speak to anyone out there, I think Anderson Silva cruised in that fight. If he really wanted to finish off Thallus Laettes, I'm pretty sure he could have.
Yeah, and in that fight, I mean, he didn't really want to engage at all with Laettes because Laettes, you know, it was one of those butt-flopping fights we talked about earlier. I mean, we saw it in the Verdum-Overeem fight, but this was the other one. This is the one that, you know, before that even happened, that people were really kind of getting on Anderson's case. And then the whole Damian Maia fight happened, and then with the two of those,
it was Cote, Laettes, Damian Maia, almost back to back to back.
And at the time, at the time after the Damian Maia fight, fans were not happy with Anderson Silva. He did not have the his reputation of being the best pound for pound in the world was severely tarnished at the time, and people were saying this guy's not the best in the world.
To this day, it still goes on,
and it was a huge problem at the time. And then you know what, he came out and he destroyed a bunch of guys, and then everyone's back, and Anderson Silva's good gracious. But yeah, I mean, it's really weird, especially the timing of it to bring this up, also to almost insult another fighter, saying, you know what, I didn't go fully out there. I didn't put it all on the line. I mean, you don't really say that, especially as a winner. I mean, you seem like
but he said it in a manner like, look, that's my friend. I didn't want to hurt my friend. And Fallis was like, dude, we're not friends. We never were friends. What are you talking about?
And even with the Damian Maia fight, he was saying Damian Maia disrespected him, which
he called him a playboy and stuff like that.
Yeah, which didn't really make sense because Damian Maia is not really that kind of person to do that. It was, you know what, a lot of the talk coming out of Anderson Silva and his camp has been weird over the years. I mean, there's a lot of kind of erroneous statements that they make about certain fights. You know, another kind of criticism that's always been coming down on the camp is if he doesn't have a great performance, there's always injury talk, you know, his elbow, his shoulder, his ribs. So, I mean, a lot of the times there's talk coming out of that camp that maybe wouldn't, it makes news, but maybe it's not always the truth.
So now he calls out George St. Pierre. He wants that fight with George St. Pierre. He's never ever done that before. Is this a case of Anderson Silva realizing the horizon is just over the hill? It's almost time to go, time to cash in and make as much money as possible. I can beat George St. Pierre. I want to fight George St. Pierre. Because he used to call out guys like Michael Bisping and Rich Franklin. Well, he already defeated Rich Franklin twice. Of course you call him out because you're going to beat him again. Michael Bisping at the time wasn't getting the respect that he's getting now of being a good mixed martial artist. He still thinks he can beat Michael Bisping. I think he can beat Michael Bisping. But he seems to be, he used to only call out fighters, in my opinion, that he knew were you know, quote unquote paychecks. Now he's calling out George St. Pierre. But it's a different type of paycheck. It's a big paycheck.
Yeah, and I agree. I think this is definitely something for the money. I mean, especially his talk after the Chael Sonnen fight, where he was kind of avoiding the Chris Weidman discussion, saying, oh, I don't want to fight Chris Weidman because he's not a big name. But then he goes and calls out a Luke Rockhold, who I don't know if you ask the casual MMA fan, but I'm guaranteeing that more people know who Chris Weidman is than know who Luke Rockhold is. And that's not taking anything away from Luke Rockhold. It's just, if you're in the UFC, people know you more. And it was just weird that Anderson thought that was a bigger payday as far as money. The George St. Pierre fight, definitely one of, if not the biggest payday he would ever receive. And what's really interesting is the timing. If you're going to call out George St. Pierre, I think the best time to do it is after he's coming off a long layoff and after a really serious injury. And we've talked in the past before George was injured, and we said, you know what, the longer this fight doesn't happen, the better it is for George because Anderson is getting older.
Yep.
Well, now the timing is perfect for Anderson to fight George because you got a guy who hasn't fought in over a year. By the time they put this fight on, he'd have one fight in 2 years. And someone who's coming off a very serious injury, especially the kind of injury it is to the style that George St. Pierre has, he wouldn't be as explosive for those takedowns. And if he doesn't have an explosive takedown against someone like Anderson Silva, who's shown his takedown defense has improved drastically, you don't want to be in a stand-up fight with Anderson Silva, especially if he's the bigger fighter and you don't have a lot of fights in the recent years.
If you're George St. Pierre and you have confidence that you can defeat Carlos Condit, and you can defeat Nick Diaz, do you take the Nick Diaz fight first, then Anderson Silva, and continue to prolong the fight with Anderson Silva as Anderson continues to get older?
I think because of the difficulty in putting this match together, I mean, there was a point where it was very, very close that I was convinced that this fight was going to happen. And then...
When was that? Because I've never believed it was going to happen.
I think it was like a year or a year and a half ago. I was convinced, you know, Dana White came out with a statement, if George St. Pierre gets through, I believe... Thiago Alves. If he gets through Thiago Alves and Anderson Silva wins his fight, this fight's happening. I was convinced it was going to happen sometime in the fall that year or...
You bit the bait.
And I was like,
we could be doing that right now.
And I thought that was the moment. And then after it didn't happen, I didn't think it was going to ever happen. I was convinced it's never going to happen. And now that they're mentioning it now, I'm not biting. I'm not sure this fight is any closer to happening than it was then. And I think the more that you have John Jones winning fights, and because of the size, the way they look, I mean, John Jones is kind of a lanky fighter like an Anderson Silva. They have a very similar build. I think people are going to want that fight more than a George St. Pierre. And when you look at the welterweight division, it looks, you know, every bit as dangerous as any time we've ever seen it. And you got George, who really kind of has to prove himself again now that he's been gone for so long.
If you're Anderson Silva's camp, do you call out George St. Pierre, defeat George St. Pierre, and then immediately turn around and say, our last fight will be versus John Bones Jones?
Yeah, if you like money, I think that's the thing you do. I mean, both of those fights, probably the biggest paydays in MMA right now.
History. And
if Anderson Silva is involved in both of them, well, he's going to be a very, very rich man. And I think that is the best way to end your career, especially, let's say he gets through George St. Pierre. He's going to have a ton of money. He's going to have, his legacy is cemented. And then he fights a John Jones. He always has that kind of ready-made excuse. Listen, Anderson's going to be pushing, you know, 39, 40 at the time. And John Jones is a bigger fighter. A lot of people say this guy could fight at heavyweight.
Before Johnny goes to heavyweight, yeah.
There's a lot of things that people will look back through the history of MMA and say, listen, these are the explanations for why that fight didn't go his way. I think it'd be win-win for Anderson Silva, and it would turn out very well for his bank account as well.
The person knocking on the door of this conversation is Chris Weidman. He can't be forgotten. Unfortunately for Chris Weidman, the Anderson Silva camp doesn't want to take him on because he doesn't have the cachet or value to draw in some pay-per-views. So Chris Weidman accepted that very graciously and said, okay, I'm going to sit here on the sidelines. I got some spurs in my elbow. I want to heal from that, but I want to put a message out there basically and say, I think it was with MMA Junkie, he stated, listen, Michael Bisping and Brian Stann are fighting in Toronto. I want the winner of that fight. Neither one of those two guys is going to leapfrog me on the way to Anderson Silva. I want the winner of that fight. By the time they fight, by the time he's going to try and rest up, and then he takes on the winner over there. I think it's a wise move by Chris Weidman because he is now a fighter who gets it. He understands the importance of name recognition, building value, and he said, you know, said, I've already beaten Mark Munoz, who was number three. I beat Damian Maia, who at the time may have been number six.
And on short notice.
But because the performance wasn't very good, people didn't like that. Then he beats Mark Munoz, who arguably was number three in the rankings, and defeated him with a full training camp. He understands the importance of starting to put guys on his resume, guys on his record, before he gets to Anderson Silva. In essence, he's going to try and pull an Anderson Silva and not clean out the division, but clean out the contenders and give Anderson no choice while Anderson waits for GSP. So there's a bunch of different variables that are taking place here.
Yeah, and I think the best thing that Chris can do is stay in the media, keep talking. I mean, especially when he volunteered to come forward to save 151 to fight John Jones, that fight never happened, but just the fact that he was willing to step in, it gave him a lot of carte blanche on the internet. A lot of people, a lot of fans are you know, becoming Chris Weidman fans because of that, his ability to take fights on short notice and step up. But I think he also needs to sell himself a little bit more. You know, maybe he needs to go to the school of Chael Sonnen and trash talking. I don't know if he needs to go as far as Sonnen, but he at least needs to, you know, challenge the champion and say, listen, I'm drawing the line right here, and you need to answer this challenge. Otherwise, you know, you're the one that's not looking so great in the public eye. And if he seems just reserved enough, say, I'll accept whatever Anderson wants to do and I'll just continue fighting. I don't know if that's the right decision. I think he needs to continue to pressure, you know, Anderson in the media, the UFC in the media to say, listen, I'm ready now. This is my time. And you know, I'm the guy that should be challenging for the championship, and really they need to answer it.
And it's a lot of guys just trying to talk that way. Seth Pazinski just came out recently. If you know who Seth Pazinski is, he's on a bit of a winning streak as well. Because John Jones was moved to Toronto, his bout has now been dropped onto the Facebook prelims. He is not a happy camper. He's losing a lot of money, and he came out in a recent interview and stated, what do I got to do now? Do I got to start trash talking guys? Do I got to start ripping guys apart? Because my fighting and winning is not speaking for itself. I need to change things up. And I think a lot of fighters are finally starting to realize that. We'll talk more about that and all kinds of different headlines from the world of mixed martial arts. You're listening to The Showdown on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. The Showdown. The Showdown with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Welcome back to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. As always, my co-host in studio, on your radio left, or podcast left, or computer screen left, or whatever left, just put your hand out, and you'll see an L if you extend your fingers. It's Tyler Mason. You can catch him online via Twitter, at Tyler Mason. Myself, at Showdown Joe via Twitter for all the updates. And like I said, don't forget, there'll be some new stuff coming out on sportsnet.ca about yours truly. Not about... just more stuff that I'll be able to contribute to. We'll cross that bridge as we get to it. If you like that intro song there, that was 40 Sons. You can follow them at 40 Sons on Twitter. They're playing at Wegs in Vaughan September 15th for an hour only. You can meet a bunch of UFC veterans there as well. At the same time, oh, by the way, Fitness Kickboxing Canada. Coaching Summit. Greg Jackson and Faraz Ahabi with Ross O'Donnell, the head coach for the Fitness Kickboxing Canada, Sunday, September 23rd, the day after the UFC event, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Up on 660 Riddell Road, Orangeville, Ontario. Just visit fitnesskickboxingcanada.ca for all your information. You may want to get out there if you get a chance because it is unbelievable what these guys have to offer. I've done a seminar with Greg Jackson. I've done a seminar with Faraz Ahabi. I can just imagine what both those two guys on the same mat will put people through. It's going to be phenomenal. And Ross O'Donnell's workouts and warm-ups absolutely suck. I don't enjoy them. I don't like them. They hurt. They're painful. They exhaust me. Call me whatever you want. Is that fair?
That's definitely fair.
All right. We talked about Chris Weidman. We talked about Seth Pazinski off-air. We talked about him just before the break and off-air. We discussed it as well. You mentioned that trash talking isn't necessarily the way to go, but at least promoting yourself. And that's sort of what I meant. It's important to note that guys have to promote themselves, because if you don't, listen, there's so many mixed martial artists, once their careers have come and gone, or they're no longer in the UFC, that text me, that say, hey, listen, you know, can I get on your show, or can I do this, or can I do that? You need this. And I said, look, man, when you were in the UFC and I tried to contact you, you gave me a hard time. You didn't want to do it. Now that you're no longer there, now you understand it. Now guys that are no longer involved in the sport have walked away from the sport. I talk to them every so often. I should have did this, or I should have did that. Now you know. The time is now. If you're a mixed martial artist, the time is now. You have to get out there and do as many interviews. This career is short, men. I'm not sure why guys just don't want to grasp this or understand this. This career is short. You're one shit kick away from it being over. Okay, maximize the revenue that your brand can generate. If you don't do that, you can't come after your career is coming to an end or to an end and then say, hey, man, can you get me on your show? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I mean, I think there's a big difference, too, when you ask for a title shot. There's a big difference between the way Chris Weidman did in his last fight. He said, you know, I really think I'm ready for Anderson Silva. But he said it kind of like in a very quiet, kind of, you know, shy undertone. There wasn't very, you know, boisterous. I mean, if you look at the way Kenny Florian called out BJ Penn.
Yeah,
I mean, that is a highlight clip that they played over and over and over again. I mean, especially before that fight, Kenny Florian was saying, you know, I finish fights. You need with such enthusiasm. George St. Pierre, when he called out Matt Hughes, gets down on his knees and begs for a title shot. Those are the moments that you need to create for the people to remember who you are. You can't just, you know, do like Dong Hyun Kim did and says, you know, I really want GSP, or Chris Weidman just saying, I think I'm ready. You have to really call out a guy. You have to say, I'm the best guy in the world, and I can prove it in a title fight. And you have to do it with enthusiasm and with, you know, just some energy.
Dong Hyun Kim's in a bit of trouble, or he's going to be in a bit of trouble. Did you read the interview that he had talking about the difficulty in traveling and the finances that the Asian fighters are unfortunately not making with the UFC?
Yeah, I did see that he had problems with you know, some of the way the Asian fighters are getting paid and the travel.
The
travel is understandable. I mean, anytime you're going to be traveling across the world, there's going to be issues with your performance in that. And I think it was good news that, you know, that.
And then he was happy. He mentions, I understand and respect Bibiano Fernandez for not joining the UFC and competing for ONE FC.
Now that's where you be. That's where you're crossing the line.
That's where the red carpet, or not the red carpet. That's where the door's opening, and don't let it hit you where the.
Yeah, I mean, all of us would love to see Bibiano Fernández in the UFC. I mean, he's easily one of the best 35ers in the world, one of the best 45ers in the world. This is a guy that everyone would love to see in the UFC. But when you start talking about other promotions and you start complimenting guys that turn their nose up to the UFC, you're asking for trouble, especially if you're not winning every single fight that you're in. And you know what? I think it's good news. There was a report out that the UFC is planning some small events in Japan. You know, it just shows that they're branching into that market. But until they do that, unfortunately, guys that are coming in from the Pacific are going to have to deal with jet lag.
And it's very unfortunate because it's not just them. It goes the other way around. You brought up a great point with, you know, Ben Henderson and Frankie Edgar having to travel to Japan and then having to fight at altitude. So it makes a big difference. The issue that I have now, I mean, it's a crazy scenario with what happened with Jung-Yun Kim, because especially with Bibiano Fernández, in my opinion, he's got a tough fight, by the way. I mean, if he doesn't, by the way, if you want to watch Bibiano Fernández fight, he's fighting tomorrow morning at 8:30 Eastern time. It's a pay-per-view. You can check ONE FC's website, but he's competing tomorrow. I might just wake up, put a pot of coffee on, and watch me some MMA on Friday morning. But the UFC is just chomping at the bit if he loses. Like, they'll be so happy.
For sure. And we even talked about this with the John Jones saga. I mean, if the UFC can discredit someone like Fedor, they can discredit anybody. And if you're not willing to join the ranks of the UFC, a loss outside of the UFC looks horrible. I mean, it may not be horrible. You may have a really tough fight against a top-ranked opponent, but the perception is that only the guys in the UFC are top fighters. Your name isn't very big as far as recognition. There's not a lot of people out there who don't even know who Bibiano Fernández is. But if he loses outside the UFC, they can bury him easy. I mean, it's just being a promotional juggernaut that you are. It comes with being the largest brand in the sport in the world. You know, it's something that's unfortunate, but it's also it also strengthens the sport because we have that kind of recognizable promotion that even casual sport fans, not even casual MMA fans, but casual sport fans, they know what the UFC is. And that strengthens the fighters and it strengthens the sport. And this is just kind of, it's kind of an unfortunate tag on is that you're going to have guys outside of the UFC that may be the best in the world, but if they lose, it's going to be more detrimental to their career than if they lost in the UFC.
You know, especially because they announced the fact that Bibiano was with the organization and the next thing you know, it fell apart. And he was never part, quote unquote, he says he was never part of the organization and the UFC's never really come out and said anything about that. So irregardless, we'll see what happens when this fight actually goes on. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Their website says as of right now, 22 hours to go. You know what? I'm going to do my best to wake up. Well, it's 8:30 in the morning. Of course I'll be up. My son will be punching me and kicking me in the face by that time if I'm not out of bed. So yeah, I'll do my best to get up, but then anyways, I want to watch that event. It should be good. And if not, make sure you check the highlights on UFC Central Monday. You mentioned the UFC Japan series. That's not written in stone. It was a report that all of a sudden got switched around because I first read the news and I'm like, oh, wow, they're going to have that series and insert Psy here. You know, obviously with me trying to create the Canadian fight series here for the longest time. We'll talk about that. But at the same time, Japan potentially is getting 4 events a year to build their local talent, but the Japanese market is so much different than the North American market. I mean, you need a TV deal over there.
I'm just happy that people are talking about it. I mean, you always have to take these things with a grain of salt. I mean, especially since after the UFC bought Pride and they said, Pride's not going anywhere. We're still going to hold Pride events. That never happened. So it just shows you how difficult that market is, especially if you have, even if you have the brand that Pride had. Once the Japanese perception on something changes, it's very hard to change it back. But, you know, I think starting small is the way to go. And if they're talking about it, if the idea is out there, I think that's a positive.
Yeah, this seed's been planted, in my opinion. But the difference is in Japan, it's a completely different market in terms of, like, the sport is destroyed pretty much over there, especially on a mainstream level with the organized crime and all of that jazz. I mean, we can talk, this is a brand new show if you want to talk about that. It just can get really deep as to what happened there in Japan and how difficult it is to try and get another promotion off the ground, especially if it's not a Japanese promotion. If it's just the UFC, it's not a Japanese promotion. It's an American or an alien promotion, in essence, is what they're calling it. So it's difficult for them to get that foothold. Will the UFC look at Japan? Will they perhaps look at other Asian markets like China or India as different venues to say, hey, you know, because Japan as such has this traditional lure and love affair with so many hardcore fans, as, you know, quote unquote, it could be considered one of the birthplaces of mixed martial arts, when in, you know, it could be, Brazil is a reality. But you understand what I'm saying? People love Japan, but Japan doesn't love anything that's not Japanese per se. Do you understand what I'm saying? You know, it's a different world over there. I've been there, you know, and I know what it's like with what fans think and what the locals think and what the outsiders think. It's a different world over there. And if the UFC can pull it off, man, that is huge, huge. But you need a TV deal over there to really get it done.
And especially with the UFC's upcoming event in Macau, I mean, that offers an opportunity for them to really have some meetings around the area. And, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily planned, but to me it would seem like something that would happen is they would really kind of discuss the UFC in those markets. But I mean,
they've already got an office out there.
If this news is, you know, if there's a more to this, it sounds as though it wouldn't be, you know, Dana White out there running this organization. So it would, I'm sure they would, you know, bring in some Japanese executives to run those shows.
Well, it's Mark Fisher. Mark Fisher runs UFC Asia, right? Mark Fisher runs the show out there. No ifs, ands, or buts. He did the NBA stuff out there. He's been with the UFC for, I think, since August of 2010. So he runs the show there. He's got a great foothold. The issue is the partnership with the UFC and the organizations that help promote the events. That's the issue. And it's not like...
And the television deal.
And the television deal. There's so much there. The organized crime there is a lot bigger than people understand. So it remains to be seen what's going to happen out there. I hope it happens. For personal greedy reasons, how's that for an answer? You know, you're looking, people can see Tyler looking at me right now. He knows exactly where I want to go with this conversation. We're not going to go there.
Someday we'll go there.
Someday we will go there. Hopefully we will go there. Anything out there specifically that you want to talk about? I mean, we talked about off-air Michael Chandler, who's the Bellator lightweight champion. He's left Extreme Couture, and on good note, not a bad note, he left Extreme Couture to go train with Alliance MMA in San Diego. When Dominic Cruz was filming The Ultimate Fighter opposite Uriah Faber, he got some training in with Eric Del Fierro and loved Eric Del Fierro. It was actually Gil Martinez who said, listen, yeah, do it. Gil Martinez is one of the head guys over at Extreme Couture. And then he loved it. He went to visit San Diego, loved it even more, and now he's moved out there to Alliance MMA to work with the likes of Dominic Cruz and Ross Pearson, Eric Del Fierro, and Alexander Gustafsson and Phil Davis and Brandon Vera. They have a lot of light heavyweights there.
A lot of big boys.
Interesting teammate versus... Anyways, let's not even go there. What do you make of the move, though?
I think it's going to be a good move. I like when, you know, guys switch camps and they get kind of a different perspective. It kind of makes you think about moves that have happened from Extreme Couture before. I mean, Gray Maynard seems to be the freshest in everyone's mind. It makes you wonder why would be guys leaving, one of the most famous camps in the world. But I think it's a good decision, from Chandler. In San Diego, they're right near, you know, Rafael Mendez and Andre Galvao, and, you know, a lot of the top jiu-jitsu guys in the world as well. So, and I know they have a relationship with Alliance. So, you know, you're going to get some top-notch training out there, and it's always good to get a different perspective on your game if you want to evolve.
How cool would it be to have Michael Chandler in the UFC? Take nothing away from Bellator, but how cool would it be?
It'd be amazing.
He would be phenomenal in the organization. As always, you're passing me some notes here. Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, we want to give our condolences to Wanderlei Silva and his family. His father passed away in a terrible accident in Brazil. Godspeed to the Silvas, and hope everything strengthens. All the best, Wanderlei, to you and yours. Thank you very much for coming in, Tyler.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Showdown on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.